completely with you in terms of how diet is so important in terms of bone health and just general health. I mean, as you say, people being lighter in their demeanor because they actually feel better.
Yeah, I feel empowered and confident.
Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am Debbie Robinson, your host and guide on your Stronger Bones lifestyle journey.
My next guest is Dr. Nick Birch. Nick studied medicine in Cambridge and London and started working as a junior doctor in 1985. Following orthopedic surgical training, he started specialty practice as a spinal surgeon in 1996. He continues to have a busy non-surgical spinal practice. In 2018, Nick founded OsteoScan UK with the intention of offering high-quality bone health assessments locally rather than in a hospital setting using the Echolite REMS system. Since then, he has carried out over 2,200 REMS scans. Nick is the spine specialty editor for the Bone and Joint Journal and is a non-executive director in several medical technology companies developing innovative treatments for back pain and biological systems monitoring. Nick is married and has two grown sons. His leisure interests include wood turning and motorcycle riding. Nick, welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am looking so forward to speaking with you today to have this information for women that want to learn more about Echolite.
Thanks very much, Debbie. It's great to be here.
Okay, so let's get started. I want to know more about this. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I really want to hear what you have to say about what is Echolite. What is that?
Echolite is a company. That produces a technology which is called REMS. REMS is an acronym for radio frequency echographic multispectrometry, but that's a bit of a mouthful. So REMS is easier. And given that it's a four-letter acronym and DEXA is a four-letter acronym, people get comfortable with that. It's a different way to look at bone health compared to the traditional technology of DEXA. DEXA has been around for about four decades and uses x-rays of two different powers to look at the differential absorption of x-rays between bone and soft tissue next to it. So what it really wants to do is say, if I take an x-ray of you, Debbie, can I look at your bone and compare it to the soft tissue next to it and understand how much calcium you've got in your bone? That's what DEXA does, really. What REMS does is somewhat different, because it uses ultrasound and it has two different mechanisms to measure bone quality and bone health. And one is looking at the density, that is how much stuff have you got in your bones? And the other is your bone quality, that is how well built they are. And that is unique. And so the technology has been available five and a half years, and is really now mature and is taking off and is actually being seen around the world as the next thing in terms of bone health assessment.
Okay, so just because I kind of like to put this in layperson's terms. Most of my people are women, so I'll say laywoman's terms, but layperson's terms. So the DEXA, as I understand it, looks at the outside mostly, the cortical bone, not necessarily the inside, the architecture of the bone?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, yeah.
And so then with the REMS, which is funny, REMS, rapid eye movement, and that's what I think of when I think of that, which sleep is very important for bone health. So then we're looking at the interior portion, and would that be, and that is going to give us fracture risk or not, depending on the quality, or is it about how much of the bone is there or how dense, or not, I don't want to use the word dense because that can throw us off with DEXA scan. But is it more about how much architecture exists within inside the bone for quality?
Yeah, so two things there. One of which is that the REMS looks at both the cortical bone and the cancellous bone. That's the spongy bone within the bone itself, because it can look into the bone. It's not just looking at the surface as DEXA does. So that's the first thing. And you're quite right. It looks at the density of that bone, so how much calcium is in there. But at the same time, it automatically calculates what is the organization, what is the toughness of that bone. And that is the key parameter that is very difficult to get any understanding from any other technology.
Yeah, it's so, I'm very visual and I like to explain it this way. But if you think about a house that's being built with the framework, with the wood, that would be DEXA scan would look at the wood. And then when you start to put on the plaster and all of the interior, the workings, the electricity, the plumbing, we want more electricity and plumbing and plaster in our bones because it's going to be less likely to fracture if we slip, trip, or fall.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty good analogy. The analogy I use is a black box, and that is that if your bones are a black box, what DEXA can do is can measure the black box, the height, the width, the length, and the weight, and therefore give you a density. But it doesn't know what's inside the black box. So if the black box is then dropped from the first floor of your house, DEXA can't tell you whether whatever is inside is going to break or not. What REMS does is opens the black box and it looks inside. So if you've got a brick in your black box, and that shatters when it lands on the concrete, that's then fragile bone. But if you've got a steel ball bearing that bounces, that's really tough. And that's what DEXA can't do, but REMS can do.
Yeah, and that's important because that diagnosis, the moment of diagnosis, puts women into such a state of fear of breaking and fragile. And then when you move less, you lose more bone because you're not using it. You have to use it or lose it. And so my last podcast I did is osteoporosis all in your head? Because it was the mental emotional component. Number one, what the diagnosis does for you and causes you to be lose your confidence and be more fragile or move less, but then also the mental emotional stress and cortisol and what we know that does for bone loss. So that, yes. And that's how I found you. I found you because Dr. Sue Egli reached out to me. She had just been diagnosed. She was a psychiatrist in the UK, and now she's a holistic health coach. And she was newly diagnosed within 6 weeks and ferociously studied about osteoporosis. And she found you in London because she's in England and came in and had the Echolite. And it was your system, your machine that gave her peace of mind because she had her DEXA scan and she said to me, I don't feel weak. I mean, she's a very active woman. She didn't feel weak. And then your office did her DEXA and you told her about her bone quality that, yes, you are strong. And that helped her mentally feel stronger, which that's what I think, to me, that's what Echolite is going to do for women. It's going to empower them and give them confidence.
I think you're right. I mean, when Sue came to see me, she was very typical. And that is that she'd been given a diagnosis that was a catastrophe. But she was very atypical because of her medical background, and she was able to therefore go and explore and to research and to find a way to go forward. And what I see across the whole of the UK, because I do a lot of external clinics, I put all the machine and the couch into the trunk of my car, and I go off to places and set up a clinic and do a pop-up clinic somewhere. And so people come to me rather than sort of there locally, rather than travel. But it is universal that women receive a diagnosis by somebody, and often it'll be now because of the pandemic, it'll be over the telephone. They won't have a face-to-face. They'll be said, you've got osteoporosis, come in and pick up your meds, that's it. And you're quite right. They then think, I've got osteoporosis, I can't move. And suddenly that lack of movement, we see it in all musculoskeletal problems. If you don't move, then you are going to get worse. So movement is life, and that's really the key. And it's the psychological fear. There is actually, there was a good paper a couple of years ago showing that in rats, you can take out a bit of the brain. You can introduce osteoporosis, which means there's a brain-bone direct link, and it's sitting right next to the anxiety center in the brain. So you're quite right that if you are anxious or fearful, then that has its own chemical effect on bones.
Yeah, actually, Dr. Fishman, who I study with yoga therapy, I don't know if you know him, Dr. Lauren Fishman, he's in New York. He's a physiatrist. And he was, is it called sclerin? Whatever the chemical was they were studying in those rats?
Sclerostin.
Yes. He did a talk on that. And that was really about like sarcopenia. It was finding this. Yeah. So I was learning a little bit about that. Yeah, it's so true. And the word severe, I don't know if this is used in the UK, but the word severe, when I have conversations with women to bring them into my programs, some of them are given this word severe. They actually feel like an egg and they're so cautious. And honestly, Nick, that's how it was for me when my bone collapsed at age 50 when my joint collapsed. I never even thought of my skeleton before this. Never even knew that the femur bone angled in, didn't understand it. And I used to think like, what if it snaps off now? What if it breaks now? I stopped playing tennis. I stopped running. I really did stop. I was actually 50 pounds more than I am now when I had my hip replacement because I stopped moving. And then my DEXA scan went down in my hip from lack of movement. So I experienced it myself. And that's what happens. You feel like you're going to break. And yep. It's really, yeah. Okay. So REMS, the thing I'm finding is it's not so available yet. I know you have one, and now I just visualize you as going around with your trunk and doing the REM screenings on women. In the US, I know that there's Dr. Bush in North Carolina. There's some people in Canada. I want to be a part of bringing this here and be a part of how somehow, some way to get this, because I really do see this as so valuable, not just physically for that diagnosis or the criteria, the results, but for the mental, emotional layer, because that's such a huge component of this disease, osteoporosis.
It's true. So the first thing is that REMS, of course, is only, as I said, 5.5 years old. So I bought my first REMS machine in July 2018. I was the first user in the UK. And there's only one other commercial user in the UK at the present. And the biggest problem was the pandemic, because things were just taking off. You know, Echolite launching into 2018, 2019, thinking that it's going to have this great success. It went to a lot of conferences and trade shows. And then suddenly the pandemic turned everything off. And so that was the biggest problem with getting REMS out to an awful lot of people. In the US, here in Los Angeles, Dave Williams has got a machine, and he's got a practice. So there is at least one REMS machine on the West Coast here. And you're quite right that Andy Bush has got his machine in North Carolina. Kim Zambito in New Jersey, I'm not sure whether she's still got a machine, but she certainly has had a machine. And then they've got Megan and Margaret up in Canada who've got theirs. And the good thing is that Sue Brown is getting them all together now and is actually on the road with them. So they're doing effectively the same sort of thing that I do. They've got a clinic in St. Louis that's coming up. And so people can then, you know, get to St. Louis and get access to this technology. So, but you're right, it's going to take a little while. And I'm just now at the phase where I've got to the peak number of scans that I can physically do in a year. So now I have to scale the business. And that's what I'm working on right now in the UK. Hopefully over the next few years, we'll have lots more machines and lots more people.
Yeah. And I think that the, you know, money is always the big thing for insurance companies, for corporations. This is preventative, and actually preventative to save money in the future. People are out of work for a long time when they fracture a bone. And yeah, so there's that. So hopefully something's going to happen, and hopefully I'm a part of this in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Okay, Nick. So let's talk now about, well, you're a spine surgeon, and I love that you say that you're non-surgical, right? That's what your approach now is, non-surgical.
I decided that my wife and I decided when I got to 55 that I'd probably done enough operating, and so I stopped operating. I still see people with spinal problems, but I don't do the surgery. But I mean, 95% of spinal care is non-surgical, and it was an easy transition to stop doing an operation, stop doing operations, and then of course then I got into other things. One of which was doing REM scans and running a bone health service.
Okay, so let's talk then about diet and exercise. And you use the word Trump's meds. I try to say, yeah, that was like a weird word here in the US for a while there. So diet and exercise and how that might be better than medications.
So I think the key to this is, I mean, we've known it for a very long time, and that is that if you don't get the diet right, if you can't get your microbiome working really well, then you are going to have systemic inflammation and all sorts of poisons leaking into your body through a leaky basement membrane of the gut. And that has a direct effect on your health and on your bone health. And so the key that I stress to women is that they need to have the right nutrients. And I have a list of the 10 key nutrients, the first of which, of course, is calcium, because you've got to get calcium into the body. And then D3 is an easy one. But most doctors I speak to have never come across vitamin K7, K2, MK7. You know, they just don't know what it is. They don't know that vitamin C is important. They don't know that folate's important and all of the trace elements. So having the dietary component is so important, because if you haven't got the key bone nutrients, then you're not going to build good bone. And on top of that, of course, is that if you don't, as you said, if you don't move, if you don't exercise, then you are not going to be able to maintain your bone toughness. And I think one of the things I've seen in the almost 2,500 REM scans I've done now is that we know that body mass index and bone density are highly correlated. And the lower your body mass index, the lower will be your bone density. And I know that you've got some champion patients who've done so well with diet and exercise. And what'd be interesting is to look at their BMI and say to them, okay, your build will give you a certain amount of loading on your bone. And it doesn't matter how much extra exercise you do, there'll be a limit to what you can do. So for instance, if you've got a 72-year-old lady who has she's slight, you know, maybe weighs 120 pounds and is 5'1", something like that, she's not going to be able to get normal bone, because she just hasn't got the mass to do it. Not unless she decides to pump iron. If she does that for, you know, 4 hours a day, then that might be the case. But as soon as you stop, then it all goes back to where it is. And I often quote, my wife is a good example. My wife's 4'11", and she weighs 42 kilograms. So whatever that is in pounds, I can't remember what it is now. So it's just over 100. She's 110 pounds, you know, in a t-shirt. She's really, really small. And she's got a body mass index of 18. Now, she has a bone density, which I've measured several times, with the bone density is really low. I mean, she's got what would be called by the rheumatologists or the endos, severe osteoporosis, that they'd have to put her on immediately onto a Venity or something like that. And then her fragility score is absolutely brilliant. She's got really good tough bone. She spends in the summer up to 12 hours a day gardening. So she's just doing all this fantastic mixed exercise. We've got three dogs, and occasionally the Labradors, then they'll go off on one, and then there'll be a 30-kilogram Labrador bumping into her and knocking her over. She's never broken a bone. So when we look at bone density and diet and exercise and that, we also have to look at a woman's build. And if we know that she's slight, then it doesn't matter that you've got low bone density, as long as you've got good toughness. And you did get the good toughness with the diet and the exercise.
Okay, that's so interesting. I ask women all the time, how tall are you? Because most of my work is online. How tall are you? What do you weigh? And I'm amazed at how many women are in that 5'3" or below and in that 120 or below category. And, you know, the generation of women now that are in the 60s and 70s are of the low fat generation. And so there's a lot of like wanting to be lean or desire to be lean. A lot of these women eat fat free. And I try to explain the importance of good, healthy fats for our cells, the phospholipid layer, our cells are made, membranes are made out of fat. But what you said that really was interesting to me, and I don't know if I've thought of this before, there's a maximum that you're going to get if you're 5 foot tall, 5'1", 5'2". And to understand that once you get the maximum of the score of what you get, now it's about that interior, back to the black box that you spoke about, or the framework of the house, that you get your outside structure, but now work on your interior. So interior decorating, you could always work on interior decorating for your house, for your bones to be strong, to never stop that. So that's interesting what you were saying. And then also, Nick, it's not just about what we eat, it's about what we absorb. And this is what I find in the work that I do. I run a stool, I run a hair mineral, I find either lack of mineral profile, or I find so much gut inflammation, leaky gut. And if that's happening in your body, it doesn't matter how much calcium, vitamin K, magnesium, doesn't matter what you're eating, if it's not going from mouth to bone. And that's what happens. That's why really having a healthy gut is so important, to make sure you're digesting, absorbing, and assimilating the nutrients of bone building.
It is, that's actually true. And I've come across now tens, if not maybe several hundred women who've been diagnosed with IBS. And you start to talk to them about it and you think, hang on a second, you've not got whatever IBS is. IBS is a dustbin diagnosis. It's, you know, it's a diagnosis of, oh, well, you've got some gut symptoms and we can't be bothered to investigate you and we don't know what it is. So we'll call it IBS and just go away and have some fiber and bits and pieces and you'll be fine. And of course, they're not fine. They are highly symptomatic. But many of them have started to look at this now, and they're looking at their gut in the way that you do, and saying, "Well, what tests can I look at?" So a sub portion of them will have SIBO, so small intestine bacterial overgrowth, and then they're quite simple to diagnose, which is fine. And then another subgroup of them will have whatever the other gut conditions are that cause dysbiosis. And unless we actually look at that and say, well, we've got some tests, we've got, as you said, we've got the labs that we can actually really look at that. We just need to know that they need to come to Debbie or to whoever, you know, Debbie Mark II is on the East Coast, and actually then find that expertise, they're not going to get better because they're always just be told by their gastro that, you know, oh, well, you've got IBS, you know, get on with it. And so, and that I think is such a shame because it has such a negative effect on their ability to maintain their bone health because they're just not absorbing properly, as you say.
Yeah, well, it's a broken system and the way we've been doing it's broken. So this is all the new stuff that's coming in. DEXA has so much variability. There's a lot that's wrong with the DEXA scan. I think that the REMS, the Echolite, is going to be a better option. And then, yes, we need to focus on this part. And, you know, with SIBO, have you ever heard of Dr. Davis, William Davis?
Where does he practice?
I don't know where he practices. I think it's on the East Coast because a book called Super Gut.
Ah, yes, I've heard of that, yeah.
Okay, it's fantastic. So he thinks 80% of the population has SIBO. And he said that some of the species that used to be in the colon, some of the methanobacteria species have migrated up to the small intestine. And the stool lab that I run looks at some of these species. There's an opportunistic section on the stool lab that shows you gut bacteria that could potentially trigger some autoimmune conditions. And if you see a lot of red there, it's a lot of inflammation. We call it inflammatory dysbiosis. You see this in the stool lab. And yes, unless you put the fire out, you can't actually work on building because you're not digesting, absorbing. And sometimes fiber, you know, the physicians, they just don't, honestly, they don't know any better. They say, take calcium, take vitamin D, though that's the new thing I'm hearing all the time. And then if they were to tell someone to eat fiber, sorry, with your laugh, I'm not trying to say anything negative about physicians. It's
go ahead, because I actually have exactly the same conversations and that's actually fine. Yeah. Hey, take calcium, take some calcium carbonate. And I say to women, why do you want to take calcium carbonate? You know, because the other name for that is chalk. And the only good thing that chalk ever does is write on a blackboard. So, you know, why would you want to do that? You know, it's but you're absolutely right. You know, it's a very, very, if you like, sort of monotherapeutic way to approach what is a difficult and widespread problem.
Okay. And well, because I think that conventional medicine, that's where we've kind of gone, let me say, wrong, if I dare say that. We're so narrow focused. And the reason why, because when you have double blind randomized studies, you have to have only one variable and everything else constant. Well, this 70 trillion system with the level of intelligence is never going to be held constant. So we look at this thing or this thing or this thing, but what's happening over here, 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 and here. So I think that's part of the problem. The thing with calcium, and I run a hair mineral lab to look at calcium, it's about balance. So what I do as a yoga therapist is help people strengthen their external balance to stand on one foot and fall prevention, but then the internal balance of your biochemistry. So calcium, you need it to stay in your bones. And if you've got chronic systemic inflammation, if you have an acidic environment and your bones are dissolving the calcium into the system, calcium in the system, it's hard. So it's going to go on the soft tissue. And also it mentally, emotionally becomes hard. It's not just hardening the heart and hardening the arteries. It also mentally, emotionally brings a hardness. And when I work with women after months, I'm shocked sometimes to see them come on because it's all of it is online. And I have people all over the world I work with. The lightness in them. It's like, wow, your calcium has gone back to your bones or it's not work because they're so much lighter. So just dumping calcium into the system is not the answer because it has to get to the bones.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And my advice is always is always to get calcium from diet. And you know, we know that, okay, if you're lactose intolerant, you can't take dairy. There are plenty of other sources of calcium which are plant based, and seeds, pulses, nuts, etc. And that of course is we are evolved as human beings to get our nutrients from our diet, and that's really where our primary sources for it. And there was an interesting paper in 2015 in the BMJ Open Heart that said exactly that, and it was lovely to see a paper that said, well, look, you know, you don't need supplements for calcium because we're evolved to get it. Just eat some more nuts or eat some more tahini or some decent food. And I think we've lost that in a lot of the world. And I see a lot of women who are, in some respects, their diets have become very narrow through circumstance. That's fine. And much of what I do is essentially an educational piece. And that is to say to them, look, start to think outside what you are eating. Be a little bit inventive. You know, if you've got a 90 or 95% plant-based diet and there's a 5% sort of meat or chicken or fish or whatever else it is, that's absolutely fine, you know. But really start to think about where you're going to get those 10 key bone nutrients, and not just accept that what comes out of a packet that's got more than five ingredients is somehow reasonable food, because we know it's not, it's ultra processed and it won't have the right nutrients in it. So I think I'm completely with you in terms of how diet is so important in terms of bone health and just general health. I mean, as you say, people being lighter in their demeanor because they actually feel better.
Yeah, I feel empowered and confident. Can you tell us the 10 nutrients?
Okay, so calcium is the big one because you build your bones and calcium, of course, then becomes hydroxyapatite and in collagen, etc. And then vitamin D, and this is in order of actually how these nutrients start to do their job. In my simple brain, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I'm not very bright, so. Calcium, it goes into the top end and you get it into the bloodstream through vitamin D. And then to get it from the bloodstream into the bones, you need to then have vitamin K2, which is usually the MK7 version, plus vitamin C, plus vitamin D9, which is folate. And then having got it into the bones, you need some cofactors. And the cofactors are all sort of, they're ions. So there's manganese, magnesium, boron, zinc, and copper. So they're the 10. So effectively, with that, you've got a three-stage process. It's absorption, and then delivery to the bones, and then constitution of the bone. And without a reasonable supply of all of those, you're not going to have an efficient system.
Yeah, I've talked about the four musketeers. I interviewed a pharmacist, and she said that vitamin D helps calcium get absorbed, magnesium puts it into the solution necessary, and then vitamin K cross-links it or takes it by the hand and delivers it to the bones. So you've expanded upon this for me with the other items here. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So you share with women the diet recommendations?
Yeah, every woman I see gets a number of different attachments to their email. So the appointment they come in and see me. We do the scan. Generally, I have a 5-minute discussion with them, particularly if they've had previous DEXAs. We go over the DEXAs, critically look at them. Have the DEXAs been done well? If they have been done well, fine. If they've not been done well, why not? And is there some mechanism whereby REMS might be then able to give them a more accurate understanding of their bone health? Do the scans. So by the time we got there, that takes around about 20 minutes. And then we've got another 20, 25 minutes to then go through the scan results. And most importantly, to put it into context, is your bone density appropriate for your build? Because if you've got a small build, you're going to have a low bone density. If you've got a heavy build, you'll have a heavy bone density, big bone density. Is it appropriate for your build? Because if it's appropriate for your build, then in many respects, we can then say, that's fine. Let's park bone density. We don't need to worry about bone density. Bone density does not predict your fracture risk. Only 30% of women who have a fragility fracture will have osteoporosis, and therefore DEXA, seen as the gold standard in bone densitometry, is not predicting the majority of fractures because they're normal or osteopenic bone. So therefore, we've got appropriate bone density. Great. Now let's move on to fragility. Let's move on to toughness. Have you got good tough bone, yes or no? And then we do that. So good. And then how do you build toughness? Well, but toughness is built by varied exercise, and bone likes to have forces go through it that are variable in terms of the amount of force. So different weights, you know, so it could be some stamping, it could be some lifting, it could be some stretching and some resistance stuff, but lots of different forces going through this bone, different speeds as well. And bone likes that, and different directions. So if you do, I mean, yoga is a good example. In yoga, you've got lots of different postures and positions, which are putting forces through your bones in different directions and at different rates and at different loading. So it's the ideal sort of exercise. And of course, the other thing is that if you've got somebody who's sitting there doing nothing, I say, look, pick up two tins of tomatoes and just sit in your armchair and just lift that and spend 2 minutes lifting those tins up and down, because that will load your arms, that'll load your spine, and suddenly you'll start to build a bit of toughness into your bones. So it's really simple things that you can do at home. You don't have to go off to an expensive class or whatever else it is. So we go through the nutrition, then we go through the simple exercises and what they can do, and if they're doing stuff already. And that's it. They've got then their, if you like, the ammunition they need now to start to move away from the position of fear that they've had, that they can start to move, they can start to do things, they can start to build. And the key, of course, is start slow and gradually build. Don't go at it like a bull in a china shop, because that will then not work. You've got to start slowly and gradually build it up. But over a period of months, then regain confidence, regain movement, and regain the ability to go out there with a smile on your face and have a light personality.
And is it every 6 months that we could actually test the REMS? Can we test that every 6 months and see results?
Yeah, you could do. So I've got a very, very interesting patient from the north of England who started using BioStrong. Her brother's a personal trainer with a BioStrong machine. And we measured her baseline in May 21. And then 6 months later, and then 6 months after that, and she was using BioStrong. She was leg pressing 500 kilograms on BioStrong, and she improved her bone toughness by 11% in the spine and 7% in her hips over a 6 month period. And then, unfortunately, she got COVID and pneumonia, and she went 6 months later, having not been able to exercise, the spine benefit had then cut in half, and then the hips were back to where they were. So you can measure it every 6 months. I recommend that if a woman has had a DEXA scan that's frightened her, and she's been frightened by the physicians or the whoever it is that's actually given her the diagnosis and really has said things to her that are pretty horrible, and I see a lot of that. That being the case, come back every year for the first couple of years just to get an understanding of what REMS is saying, just get an understanding of where you are. And then once you've got 3 points on a graph, you've got a trajectory of where your bone health is going. And then you can spread it out every 2, maybe 3 years, et cetera. If a woman wants to come back every 6 months, then that's obviously fine. We can detect changes every 6 months, as long as they're doing what we've agreed they will do. If they're not doing something, then you won't see anything in change. It'll just be static, or it'll just go down with age. So 6 months is the minimum for most people, but I wouldn't recommend it. I'd say a year and just give yourself a good year, work on it, come back. And then if the story is really good, if you've beaten age, that is that your bone density and your bone fragility have not deteriorated, that is as good as any medication. That's all that medication will give you. And if you've done that with diet and exercise, you've done a great job. And that takes a year. But yeah, I mean, some people come back every 2 or 3 years, and if they're a bit more stable.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I read that the greatest risk of osteoporosis is age. And then you were saying that what medications do is they just kind of keep you constant, so you're not actually going down that slippery slope. Okay, one more thing. Sorry, I don't want to keep you on too long, but this is so interesting. A lot of women have curvature of the spine, whether they know it or not, some kind of scoliotic pattern, some kind of asymmetry in their hips, especially if they have knee issues, feet issues, a lot of asymmetry. And the DEXA scan seems to be, it has to have a certain amount of tissue on one side and the other. So, and I think you and I spoke about that in our email. So with the REMS machine, does it look at the bone itself without even taking into account any curvature, do you know, in the spine?
So the biggest learning curve for anybody learning how to scan with REMS is to understand scoliosis and the incidence of scoliosis that comes on with adulthood is massively increasing. And we see that all around us. You know, you see women who have got curvature of the spine, who can't stand upright and having to lean forward. It's typical. You go down to the supermarket and, you know, see people leaning on a shopping trolley to support themselves because that's their scoliosis is stopping them from standing upright. So the question then is, can DEXA reliably give you a diagnosis when there is significant scoliosis? And the answer is, rarely, not because the technology won't allow it, but because the technicians who do the DEXA haven't actually been trained to do the DEXA in the right way, and they're not having audit, and that's certainly the UK. Here in the US, I wouldn't care to say. I'm sure they're all expertly trained. However, in the UK, certainly we see exactly that. So, what can REMS do? Well, because REMS is just looking at the individual bones of the lumbar spine, and you have to, with the ultrasound probe, you have to demonstrate the actual echo of the bones. And if you don't demonstrate that, the machine itself will just say, well, I'm not going to give you a diagnosis. You know, it just doesn't give you a result. So you get used to then doing a curved scan. So you can run the scan up and down. You can see, and you just, I often say to women, I said, did you know you've got a curvature of the spine? And sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no. And I say, well, you have got a curvature of the spine. It's not very big, but it might be why your DEXA scan is so discordant and why it's giving you such an anomalous result. And it often takes a scan or two, but with the thing with REMS is this ultrasound, so there's no danger. So I can scan them one, two, three times if I need to absolutely get the picture of each vertebra. So I know exactly where the curve is, and then to get that picture of each vertebra, and then that gives us an accurate understanding of what their bone health is for the lumbar spine. And that's really, I think, where DEXA does fall down. And it's been well known for decades that that's the case.
Now, the DEXA looks at L1 through 4.
Yep.
And what I've read or studied is that most fractures are T8 through 12 and L1 and 2 in the anterior portion of the spine. That's 50% of the fractures are in the spine from osteoporosis, or the statistics that I've read. Are you looking at only L1 through 4 with REMS, or do you go higher into thoracic spine?
No, you're absolutely right. It's only L1 to L4. And the reason for that is that when Echolight developed REMS, and you have to think back to when they started back in the early 2000s, they were trying to replicate what DEXA was doing, but using ultrasound. So they've taken the technology from quantitative ultrasound, which is where, you know, a woman would put her heel into a water bath, and you'd have an ultrasound shine its sound waves through the heel bone, and then infer from that what the bone density was. So they've taken that technology, and then they've moved it on to where we are today with REMS, but they've kept the same parameters. And the reason for that is because DEXA was the established technology. So they had to therefore compare themselves to the inverted commas gold standard. And the scan is therefore is only L1 to L4. We could, you know, conceivably do L5. We could, in some people, do T12, and you can't really get much higher than that. And the reason you can't get higher than that is because it's behind the breastbone. So you just physically cannot image the thoracic spine. And the implication with all forms of densitometry, except for CT scanning, the implication is that you are taking the lumbar spine values, and from that you're going to expect the thoracic spine to follow a similar pattern. But of course, that doesn't take into consideration the mechanics of the thoracic spine. Now, this is where a lot of women will come along and say, well, look, I had one fracture, but I only had osteopenia, and then suddenly I've got four fractures. Why is that? And the reason for that is because they've got one fracture, and then they've got a forward tilt of the spine, a kyphosis across that fracture. And that shifts their center of gravity forward. So that then the forces on the vertebrae above and below, so for instance, it might be T8 that's fractured, and then the T6, T7, then the T9, T10, they've got more force on them. So if they're not particularly tough, they can fracture as well. So you have this cascading tilts, and then you see women who then develop that typical thoracic kyphosis, the buffalo hump of the spine. And what they needed, of course, was that with the first fracture, they needed somebody to say to them, get your posture right, get your spine posture correct. And if you then do lots and lots of exercises to make the extensor muscles of your back, they're the big muscles on the back of the spine that hold you up, get those right, and you'll suddenly reduce the risk of having all these other fractures. So although your DEXA scan says you've got osteopenia and you've had four fractures, it's not the fact you've got osteopenia you fractured, it's the osteopenia plus the malalignment. And that's the bit that's missing. And that is that people are just not seeing a person who can look at them and say, your posture needs to be so much better. And if your posture was better, so they haven't got a Debbie to go along to who could stand there and say, right, come on, let's get that posture right. You know, you don't want to be sort of leaning forward and chair shaped, because that's really bad. And it is. I mean, these chairs are, you know, the work of the devil, aren't they, really? Because sitting is a terrible thing for us to do. And we really just need to have that really good upright posture. And that will sort out, I think, quite a number of cases where you've got a bone density that's not too bad, but then you get multiple fractures. So I've seen that lots.
I tell everyone that the most important thing I'm going to teach them physically is to take care of their spine, is to strengthen the back of the body to hold them up. I call it their hanger. And I developed something. I'm going to say I developed because I did. I tell them to put your hand here under your heart, and then I'm going to tilt this down. Hand under your heart into your belly. So I'm thinking like T5 all the way down to like L2, or at least T8 to L2. And I say, I call it the safe spinal space. And I say, maintain this all day long. Don't bend it. Don't bring it closer. Yep. So when you garden, when you're cooking, even when you're washing your hands, that forward bending needs to take place in the hip and not in the spine. And so learning how to bring in that proper movement into the hip joint is so critical for a safe spine. And I think it's the most important thing I'm going to teach them is take care of your spine.
So that effectively is what you're really saying, is to keep that core turned on.
Keep the core turned on and keep that space. Yes.
The big difficulty that you have is, and I see plenty of women who've got it, and that is that they've had a thoracic fracture and suddenly that space is gone and their ribs are then concertina down and they're headed down towards the pelvis and suddenly everything's really crowded and they can't, and they lose the ability to maintain that space. And I think you're absolutely right that it is really important that in all activity you do that. So that, yeah, it's a bit like when you're walking around. I mean, I know you go to London, but if anybody ever looks at pictures of London and they see the beef eaters, these are soldiers who stand with such great posture. And you've got to think, I want to be a beef eater. I want that posture. That's really what you want to do. And so it is so important to do that. And of course, if a woman has had a fracture, and the likelihood is that they've crunched down a bit and that the tummy's becoming, you know, crunched up, and then the inside their guts are being, squashed, and everything goes bad, and they feel awful, and they lose a lot of their self-confidence. And if they could just, that very first fracture, they could just say, okay, I want to be a beef eater. I want to be a Debbie with a safe, with a spinal space. You know, if you could do that, I think a lot of women would have a great benefit.
Yeah. Gosh, I could talk to you forever because I'd love to talk even more. I know we can't. I know we're out of time. This has been so amazing. Maybe we could do a part two and speak more about the spine. I'd love to do that. Nick, this has been so informative. The fact that you're a doctor, a spinal doctor, that you are sharing this wisdom, that you are expanding the use of this machine. And I think that so many women listening to this will actually have like a sigh of relief knowing that, well, I'm going to be as good as I can be. I'm 5'2", I weigh 110. I'm going to be as good as I can be. My structure will be as good as it can be, which is what the DEXA tells you, kind of. Now let me build the inside. Yeah. So this has been such a lovely conversation. Thank you so much. I hope to have you on again to further discuss something else, bone health related or whatever else.
Well, thanks for having me. And it's been absolute delight to have a chat. And I really do hope that, you know, people listening will have that sigh of relief and think, yeah, actually, it's not as bad as I've been led to believe.
Yeah. And then I'll put your information down below for people to look you up.
Yep. That'd be great.
Enjoy your time in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Bone loss is not an inevitable part of aging. We don't have to just wait for it to happen. There is so much that you can do. And that is what you will learn each week
on the show. Go to my website, debbierobinson.com, if you want more information about what was shared in today's episode. At the bottom of this episode in the show notes, there will be links to whatever was shared. Please subscribe to this podcast. Share this podcast with your friends, your family, or any women that you think may be interested or benefit from the information we're sharing. Please rate the podcast. And if you have any questions you'd like asked or answered, I would love to hear from you. Let's do this, ladies. Let's change the way the world views osteoporosis and slow down, stop, or reverse our bone loss, take charge, and show other ladies what is possible. Thank you so much for joining me.